Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for CEO Exclusive, brought to you by Annona Enterprises.
Great. We're here broadcasting live from the Vistage Executive Summit in Atlanta at the Cobb Galleria. And with me, I have Padia Mixon, who has spoken earlier on today. And Padia, I would love it if you would give our listeners, who unfortunately can't be here, a little taste of what your remarks were earlier on today.
Okay. Well, I am the CEO of a nonprofit called New American Pathways. We are actually a refugee resettlement and service organization. And what I talked a little bit about today was about the many refugee families that I've worked with over the years and how I've been inspired by their optimism, resilience, and resourcefulness. I talked a little bit about how our organization struggled several years ago with a major challenge in the state of Georgia where we thought our operations would be halted, and talked a little bit about how we came together with other leaders in the industry and focused on new messaging, on coming together and sharing our resources so that we could broaden our outreach and build better relationships to keep the program alive and continue to do the work that we do.
So tell us a little bit about the refugee populations that you serve. Are they refugee populations overseas, or are they refugees who are coming from overseas to the United States?
So we are serving refugees that are coming from overseas to the United States through a U.S. government program that welcomes a small number of refugees into the U.S. every year to rebuild their lives and eventually become citizens of the United States, like you and me.
And so what kinds of issues or conflicts are driving them to come to the U.S.?
So most of the refugees we're seeing today are fleeing war and violence in their countries of origin. We're looking at people who have fled war in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, people from the Congo, Somalia, also people who were persecuted on the basis of their ethnicity and in Burma and Bhutan.
Mm. And so when you talk about resilience and optimism, tell us a little bit about some of the reasons why you see that they're still optimistic and resilient despite what they've gone through.
Well, I think the opportunity to come to the United States and to have a permanent place to be that's what they've been waiting for. You know, most refugees stay in a refugee camp for 8 to 10 years before they're able to resettle in a country like the United States. And so when they get here, they know that they are permanent residents of this country. They're going to become citizens here. They finally have a true place to call home, and they're ready to hit the ground running to fulfill their dreams. And they're really grateful and want to give back to the communities that welcome them.
So what do you think these CEOs have to learn from these refugees?
Well, I mean, I think that sense of optimism in, you know, a huge challenging situation. I mean, they're coming here, they don't speak the language, they don't understand the culture, they've been in a camp for years. And yet most refugees are working and paying their own bills within 6 months. You know, they're buying homes, they're starting businesses of their own. So that sense that, you know, barriers can't stand in your way to being successful.
Hmm. That's pretty amazing. How does somebody come from a war-torn country and not having a place to live for 8 years to being self-sustaining in 6 months? How does that actually happen?
Well, that's what our organization does. I mean, we greet people at the airport. We set up their apartment. We provide intensive orientation and training. We do employment preparation. And our goal is to help people achieve first safety and stability, and then self-sufficiency in their new environment. And then once people are self-sufficient, we have vocational counseling programs, after-school programs, civic engagement programs to help people not just be self-sufficient, but actually accomplish what they dreamed about when they were sitting on that long airplane ride to come over here.
Wow. And so where does your funding come from?
So we have some funding from the federal government, especially for that initial part where we meet people at the airport and help them in those first few months, but also foundations, private donations. You know, we do some fee for service in our immigration department.
Well, it's very interesting. Me being a dollars and cents person, how much does it actually cost to get somebody, I'm assuming maybe a family of people, kind of launched through that 6 month period until they're fully self-sufficient?
So the kind of standard what we have to work with is we get $1,125 per person to secure and furnish an apartment, pay their rent and utilities and MARTA card and pocket money. So we rely heavily on in-kind donations and support from the community. And then we get about another $1,000 per person to help people become self-sufficient. And that's really what we have to work with. Of course, we get a lot of in-kind support and volunteer support to help out in that process. But then in the initial phase, we stretch those dollars as far as we possibly can.
And then are people typically coming in families? So how many, on average, how many people are coming in a family?
So we have a big mix. And so on the average family size is 3 people. But that means we have a lot of people who come as singles. And then we have, you know, families of 5 or 6 or 7, sometimes multi-generational families with grandparents, parents, and children in the same household.
Wow. And how did you get into this nonprofit? How did you get into this line of business?
So that's actually part of my talk today. I started in college as a family friend volunteer. So I volunteered with a Somali family. I came to their house twice a week, teaching English in the home and helping them navigate their new community when they first got here. And I fell in love. This family was... they were just so amazing, the way that they, the kind of workarounds they came up with to navigate daily life without language or cultural knowledge really impressed me. And I enjoyed working with them so much that I've done it ever since.
Wow. And I understand that you're also a Vistage member.
I am.
Okay. So how long have you been in Vistage? How long have you had your company, first of all? How long have you been in Vistage?
So I have been with my company now for 10 years. But I've been in the director CEO role for 6. And I've been a Vistage member for just about a year now. And I joined Vistage because, you know, sometimes when you work in this kind of field, you're surrounded by people just like you all the time. And I think it's been really great for me to meet lots of other CEOs with lots of other types of experience that can give me perspective and feedback that I wouldn't get otherwise. Mm.
And do you find that as a nonprofit, are there any other nonprofits in your group?
We just had another nonprofit member join. I'm very excited about it. She's from Habitat for Humanity, and she's my sister. It's just the two of us in our group right now.
And so do you think that your experience, or how do you think your experience is different from other CEOs who may be running a for-profit company?
You know, I mean, there are definitely some ways that it's different. I mean, you know, what we're delivering on for our investors is on mission. And that's what we're measured is are we delivering on mission? Are we doing what we set out to do? Are we making the change in the world we set out to make? And so that's how we measure success. But then there are so many things that are similar. I mean, we have to find great talent. We have to be sustainable. We have to raise money. We have to, you know, we constantly have to deal with technology. It's just a lot of the same issues that a for-profit CEO would deal with, we have to deal with too. And I think the more kind of big business acumen that you have, the better you do when you're trying to run a nonprofit. It's remarkably similar.
Mm. And so having been a member for a year, are you seeing the difference between, let's say, before, you know, the 5 years before when you were a CEO and this year that you've been in Vistage? Or what is the difference?
I mean, this year has been a really interesting year for us because not only did I join Vistage this year, but also our organization merged with another organization. So this year's just been different in so many ways. And I see it as kind of this just sort of consistent growth year after year, and that Vistage is a part of that for me. I mean, I think in the beginning it was really about getting a handle on the operations and the money, and now I think we're moving to the next step, and Vistage is a part of that for sure.
Now, did you initiate the merger? Or did you, obviously you said you've merged this year, so you've been CEO for 6 years, right? So you initiated the merger?
Well, so I, the director of this other nonprofit, she and I started talking about the vision we had kind of like over wine and coffee when we were a part of another group together. And we found out that we had a remarkably similar vision that neither one of us could implement on our own. And so it was a kind of a mutual thing. It was actually initially her idea, but up front she said, I will do this if you will stay in the director role. And so we did. And that's kind of great, because how often does it happen so easily that you decide, you know, who's going to lead the new organization?
And so what's happened with the person whose company you acquired?
So she stayed on for a little while to help us. She's kind of a guru and a genius in fundraising and marketing. And she stayed on for a little while to help us get that off the ground. And then she's moved on to become the executive director of another nonprofit. But she's thinking about joining our advisory board, and we still talk all the time.
Mm. And so having now, you know, being the CEO of a merge company, typically mergers, you know, are very, very difficult, right? So that's, how are you finding that? Like, you know, are you managing the new people, and how's that going? How are you integrating them, and like, how is that going?
You know, I am almost afraid to say how well it's going, because I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. I mean, certainly it's challenging. There are cultural differences. There are, you know, just so many little tiny things that you never think of. And that's mainly the things that are, you know, that are coming up, are these just small little everyday things. But in terms of the big picture, I think we had a very well thought out vision of what we wanted to do. And very early on, we got staff and board buy-in. And so it's gone very smoothly, because I think, you know, you'll never meet a more passionate group of people than the people that work in our organization. Half of them are former refugees themselves, and they really believe in what we're trying to do.
Hmm. And so as you look for the theme of today's event is leading with 2020 vision.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you look forward to the next 5 years at New Pathways, New American Pathways, what do you see for the next 5 years?
Well, so New American Pathways has created a continuum of service that's a little bit different from other refugee organizations. We're no longer focused exclusively on getting refugees to this place of early self-sufficiency, but we're looking at how we can help them become successful and contribute to the communities that welcomed them. And so we've developed this new kind of service model, and we're building the infrastructure to measure good impact. We think that this could be a model for other refugee-serving organizations across the country, and we really want to do the research to maximize that impact, not just for refugees, but also what's good for refugees is also good for the communities that welcome them. And that's where we're going.
So is that the thing that you guys merge to be able to do?
Yes.
Aha. And so what does that actually look like on the ground? Because to me, I can picture my mind, okay, so you help somebody, they've come, they get settled, you help them get a job, you help them get a place, you help them, you know, learn the language. What does this new line of service actually look like?
So when you talk to a refugee and you say, like, what made you get on the plane and do this? You know, people will say, I wanted a place to be safe. But then beyond that, people come here for opportunity, and a lot of people come here for their children. So we are now providing academic support and leadership development services for children in four schools, and we are also providing leadership development for teenagers. We're also providing career counseling to help refugees who already have that first job do what they did before, or access training to do something new so that they have sustainable careers that are rewarding. We have a civic engagement program. We're helping people register to vote and participate in the civic process. And we're looking at developing leaders. Many of the refugees who arrived, they were leaders in their community before they came. And all they really need to do here is learn, how do the systems work? How do I, you know, people are in my community are still coming to me to solve issues, but I don't know where to start. So how does the system work here? And providing that kind of training and support for them.
So I can imagine if somebody was a physician or a business leader, you know, very wealthy in a place that is now war-torn and they had to give up their career, and they come here and they have to work at McDonald's or whatever, is part of what you help them do reestablish themselves and get to a similar level of...
Exactly. Okay. Yes. Uh-huh. So we help them figure out, you know, how to evaluate the documents that they have from their country. See, what do you need to do to be practicing in your field here? Do you need language training? And then we try to provide career mentorships for people that are already working in that field to introduce them to people and help them understand how does that work here.
Hmm. And is your vision that you would then start to do this, as you were saying, for other refugee assistance organizations that just do that first piece?
We would like to share our model with other people who are interested in taking it to the next level.
Great, 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 great. And so, you know, back to the Vistage and your Vistage experience, you know, did your Vistage group help you through this process and making this decision, and how did that look?
So I joined Vistage immediately post-merger, but what they've helped me with are those kinds of issues that have come up bringing two organizations together and how to navigate through that. You know, there are always difficult decisions you have to make when you bring two staff together. And they've really helped me make those decisions more clearly. They've given me really great advice. They were very supportive of my speaking today and listened to the iterations of my talk and coached me along the way. So they've just been amazingly supportive in this year of transition.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for stopping by and talking with us here at CEO Exclusive. And if folks want to get in touch with you to hear more about what they've heard today, how can they get in touch with you?
So my email address is p.mixon, M-I-X-O-N, at newamericanpathways.org.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us, Pedia.
Thank you.
This show is brought to you by Annona Enterprises, where strategy is your access to money and performance. Learn more at annonaenterprises.com.